Blog Talk Radio.
The motherfucking saga continues.
Yo, yo, what's up, world? It's Badass Thuggin' like I usually do. And you better turn it up, bust some speakers out, cause we off the motherfucking cup. You dig how we do it? Dog Pound Gangsters 2000 and beyond. Blech.
What's up with it, y'all? Man, don't change that sound. This your player partner, the legendary Cocaine. And you tuned in live to Off the Cuff Radio. Better not touch that down. Wiggling.
Yeah, yeah, this is Cassidy, the hustler. And right now, you listening to the Guillotine. Show them the respect they deserve, man. Off the Cut Radio, man. Y'all already know how they doing it, man. I need y'all to stay tuned. They've been doing it for years. So show them the respect they deserve. And you heard it out of bars, mom. Easy.
Keep it moving like this. Yo, this your boy Rampage. You're not rocking with the best. With Off the Cut Radio. Classic. History. Fix your face to all you haters. We off the cuff, baby.
What's up, everybody? This your girl, Bonnie Dollars, the queen of trap, representing Crenshaw, and you are now tuned in with Off the Cuff Radio. What's up?
What's up, y'all? This is Miss Irresistible, giving a shout-out to the live show on Friday nights, Off the Cuff Radio, and I'm live from the 704. Make sure y'all tune in for the blazing hot music.
What it ain't, what it do. Chilly Chill from that original Lynch Mob. Off the Cuff Radio, always where it's at on Friday night. West West, y'all.
All right, what it is, this your man King Eric, the media assassin. We're now tuned in to Off the Cuff Radio, episode 539. Got my host T-Max with the facts in the building. What's good?
Man, what it do, y'all. Another Friday night of fantastic on the OTC frequency. Shout out to our co-host of Serialized, Dead Man, Lady Chinchilla. We alive and direct, ready to give you the best in hip-hop, internet radio, and you know how we flow. And King, tonight we have a very special guest with us. This individual is one of the most, I mean, words can't really describe how astute, how scholarly, how superb this man is at his craft in terms of being a podcaster, journalist. Everything about this individual encompasses the essence of hip-hop in terms of appreciation for the art, understanding the history, and doing dope-ass interviews just like we do. Representing Kentucky, Louisville, most notably, you know, he's definitely a guy you need to check out on the Chad Kizer podcast. Without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, the one, the only, Chad Kizer. Welcome.
What's good, man?
Yo, what's up, guys? What's good? What's good? Thanks for having me.
What's going on, man? Thank you for coming on, man. It's great to have you with us.
Yes, sir. Appreciate it.
Yeah, man. Definitely. Look, reading through your website, you know, and definitely watching some of the interviews, man. I mean, you definitely got a knack for this thing, and that's putting it mild. You're a pro with this shit.
Man, I just try my best. That's all I can do.
Definitely, man. I guess we get into it right about we do about this time. Tell us a little bit about yourself, how you got started, and all the great people that you met along the way doing it once you got started.
Oh, man. I got started doing the interviews and podcasting and things like that. I guess it was back like 2006, 2007. Did my first interview with Shorty B of the Dangerous Crew, Two Shorts Dangerous Crew.
Yeah,
and from there, man, it just took off from there. I was I started a little series on the Dub CNN website called the Dangerous Crew Series, where I just went around and was interviewing anybody and everybody that I could that was affiliated with that crew. So I did like Shorty B, Pee Wee, Ant Banks, Too Short, Goldie, even some of their affiliates like MC Breed, who did some stuff with them. And from there, man, it just kind of took off, man. Just kind of took off.
What was it like going to Oakland in terms of, or just talking to them about that Oakland aesthetic in terms of, I mean, because I remember Goldie, of course, he had that album in the Land of Funk. Of course, Ann Banks, the legendary Ann Banks, the badass from the Bay, who Too Short said, you can't have, you know, you got to have that Ann Banks bass on your music to make it sound
right.
What was that? What did you find? Yeah, what did you find about dealing about the Bay Area sound and the culture from interviewing all those guys?
That it was a very different culture. Like a lot of people, when they think of California, you know, obviously they think of L.A. and
right.
You know, that whole environment and atmosphere. But you know, going up, you know, to Northern Cali up there in the Bay Area and Oakland and all that, it's a whole different. The whole different mindset up there, and it's reflective in the music that those guys put out, and not just like, you know, Too Short and Ant Banks or Goldie and them guys, but even guys like Rappin' Forte, E-40, you know, Sebo, like all those guys that came out of the Bay, it was you know, it was a whole different thing, and those guys put it down. They really put it down. So give props to them, Ant Banks. You know, the originator of the Oaktown funk, like the way I look at it, especially when I was coming up, you know, when I was listening to West Coast music, it was either I'm listening to like Dre and Snoop and Dog Pound and those guys, or I was listening to Too Short, Ant Banks, you know, Goldie and you know, Rappin' Forte and those guys. So for me, that was the West Coast.
Yeah.
Especially the people that pioneered that sound. Yeah, especially the people that pioneered that sound. Not only like Ann Banks, but we talk about like Mike Mosley.
Oh yeah.
We talk of the Mechanics.
Rick Rock.
Yeah. I mean, of the Federation. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's just so rich out there because, like you said, when we look at the 80s, of course, going back to K-Day Radio, when we look at Ice-T, who dropped Ryan Paves in 86, of course, N.W.A. and the Posse would drop their, you know, their compilation album, rather, you know, Arabian Prince, all those guys, and, of course, Straight Outta Compton would come 2 years later in 88. But the Bay Area, of course, really started, arguably, you could say, the impetus for the California scene because, of course, Too Short's first albums. And it's crazy because I actually have that on cassette, his first two records. It was released on 75 Girls Records, for those who know that history.
Right.
So you really got the foundation of, because if anybody tells you, people we know, we talk to, interview, on air, off air, they'll tell you, the Bay is one word, hustle.
Oh, yeah.
And it's reflected in that music heavy in terms of how they get down in terms of when you hear it, you hear the passion, you hear the drive. It's all about surviving, mobbing by any means. But a trained ear who understands the difference between Northern California and Southern California hip-hop, which are both equally great, you're going to notice the difference between the sounds, and you're going to notice the difference between subject matter. Bay Area music is more concentrated on more of the hustle slash what they would call the mob sound, where you got Southern California is more of the gang culture, street culture.
Right.
But both equally tell a story from the individuals that are from, you know, their stomping grounds or the turf of where they grew. When you came up, Chad, and just really, what was the introduction to you in terms of really like where you knew this is what you wanted to do, and as you grew with it, what did you learn more and more as you immersed yourself in the culture of hip-hop in terms of the art of it and what it meant to really be a dope artist?
I mean, I got introduced to, you know, the West Coast music scene, you know, with Ice-T, NWA, DOC, and Too Short. Like, I can remember being in middle school and doing a talent show, and I did the DOC's, you know, the Formula record, because that's what was big that was coming out, you know, out then. And even before that, though, I mean, I had, like, Heavy D, Public Enemy, like, all those guys, and I just fell in love with hip-hop and the music and the culture and just, you know, everything that was going on. You know, when I started doing the interviews, you know, that was kind of just me being curious, right? And because at that time, like in 2006, 2007, you know, the Dangerous Crew had kind of disbanded, you know, Too Short, you know, in Atlanta doing a lot of stuff with Lil Jon. And I just always wondered what happened with these guys. Like, what happened to Ant Banks? What happened to Shorty B and Pee Wee and the whole crew and Goldie and all them? So it was really just being a fan, you know, of those guys and what they had done. So I, you know, I searched that out. And in doing those interviews and making those connections and building that rapport with a lot of them, you know, it was an amazing experience. To be able to, you know, to talk to those guys, because these are guys that, you know, obviously I grew up listening to. The first Too Short record I heard was the Short Dogs in the House record. And I had a buddy of mine pulled up in a white, like, Geo Metro, little hatchback. And I heard him coming from, like a mile away, right? And I'm like, man, who's this dude? And he pulls up. And it's my buddy, and he's playing the new Too Short, Short Dogs in the House, and he shouts out Louisville in the title track, and I was like, man, that's dope, you know. So I went out, got the Short Dogs in the House tape, got Born to Mac, got Life Is, and over the years, you know, I was able to find the original 75 Girls tape, so I got all those, and man, just kind of took off with it. It's hip hop to me is something that I don't even know if I could put it into words. Like, what hip hop did for me growing up and coming up, not just Too Short, not just Dr. Dre and Snoop Dogg, but like X-Clan, Public Enemy and Chuck D, the things that they were talking about, you know, just really resonated with me, and it's been with me ever since. You know, I still enjoy today's hip hop, but man, I'm an 80s and 90s kid, you know, and I still go back and listen to those records because they're so well crafted. You know what I mean? Like, you got the Dr. Dre's and the Ant Banks, but you got, like you guys mentioned, Mike Mosley and Rick Rock and EA Ski. You know, you got Daz Dillinger, like, you got all these dudes out there that just, you know, really, really laid it down. And, you know, and set it off. And that's just always stuck with me.
And I want to add on, too, I said this yesterday on the Facebook post. I don't know if you guys saw this, but I also want to add on JT, the bigger figure, because before 2B, there was Trap Flicks. He brought the imprint of the ghetto homemade hood movies, you know what I'm saying? So Trap Flicks was the original 2B back then.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, and to watch the Bay movement really go crazy, because it's always considered the Four Godfathers, which is, of course, Too Short, E-40, Mac Dre, and Richie Rich.
What about,
when you look at,
I was
really,
gonna ask you guys too. I forgot. We forgot one more name, man. We forgot to mention Spice One.
Yeah, we can't. I mean, yeah, and you know, Spice One came later because Short put him on. You know,
right.
So that was in '91 when his first album came out, and his first album. I mean, that was one thing about Short, Chad, that we noticed is Short was always looking out for his guys in terms of really trying to put them in a position to win. And when we look at the 90s era, when the Bay, because L.A. pretty much had kicked that door down. So between Compton, Los Angeles, it was, I mean, shit. I mean, you figure between the years 1986 and 1993, we have the Chronic. We have, you know, Born and Raised in Compton. We have, you know, the Trifling album. We have Act of Fool. You know, I'm just naming the records, the album. I mean, we have Never Again. We got Death Certificate. You know, we got America's Most Wanted. You know, we got, Compton's Most Wanted, Straight Checking Them. I mean, all these in the Bay is like still, it's there, but then when in the early 90s, this is when you have like E-40 and then one coming along in the process. So you got E-40, you know. And all those guys, you know, Too Short is still making music at the time. So we're seeing this whole coalescence of the California sound really come in, especially from both sides of it. In terms of what you saw as the culture progressed, Chad, and of course Hammer. We can't forget Hammer because Hammer was part of that movement as well. You know, he would bring in Oaktown 357, all of them. When you look at the time of the music, is what you said, it was just different. What do you think it was in terms of the creative aspect, the writing maturity, the overall development of the artist that contributed to those classics from all those artists?
Honestly, I think it was just the originality. Like, everybody just wanted to be, at that time, they wanted to be different. They didn't want to be like anybody else. You know, today you got a lot of people that want to be like everybody else. So that's why when you turn on the radio, everything you hear sounds almost exactly the same. But like in your time frame, like what you're saying, from like 88 to like 93, 94, 95, like, you know, everybody you just mentioned, in that whole little 5, 6, 7, 8 year time period, you had MC Hammer with all the dancing, you know, and the up-tempo stuff. And then you had, you know, Too Short, Ant Banks and those guys, you know, with the slow roll funk. You know, you had Mac Dre doing his thing. You know, you had Dre and Snoop with the G-Funk. You know, you had Compton's Most Wanted. You know, you Spice One, you know, doing his whole thing. Like, everybody had their own unique sound, unique, you know, approach to what they were doing. And I think that that's what really showed through and really made the West Coast, you know, stand out. You know, when you listen to a Dre record and you listen to like an Ant Banks record, you know, an Ant Banks produced record, they sound totally different, but they're both equally great, equally magnificent. You know, when you hear an EA Ski beat and you hear a Warren G beat, they're both dope, but they don't sound alike. Like, they sound completely different. And I think that that's one of the main things that that helped bring them to the forefront. And the fact that it's California. You know, everybody wants to know what, you know, what it's like in Cali. And, you know, I remember growing up, you know, you're listening to these songs, you're like, damn, like, LA's like that? You know, and then you listen to something coming out of the Bay, like, damn, the Bay's like that? You know?
Yeah, we were the same way, looking in from outsiders. Looking in from outsiders, and we was there, we were having the same mindset now. Probably from the NWA, CMW stage, no lie. They made it like it was scary to come out of Cal. You know what I'm saying? We seen Colors, we seen Deep Cover, we seen all this shit. But then, I think around the mid-90s, like, you know, when the happier records start coming out, like from Battle Cat and Quick and all of them, made us a little more relaxed. We were like, okay, it's more like palm trees and beautiful weather and gorgeous women and black TV.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
we can go out there now.
Right, yeah.
Yep. And you know, before we get ahead of ourselves, y'all, we'd be remiss if we don't mention Above the Law. Shout out to Big Hutch, man. You know, Chaos, you know, KMG, you know, the whole crew, man. I mean, because you figure Hutch really laid down the foundation of what would become G-Funk. You know, Dre will tell you himself that Hutch was the one that kind of, you know, tutored him and helped fine-tune his musical ear for what Dre would end up becoming.
Yeah, it's so, Hutch, Total Chaos, rest in peace to my homeboy Laylaw.
Yeah, Laylaw, man.
You know,
yeah,
Cocaine,
yeah.
All of them, you know, they put in some real work, and they didn't always get the recognition for it, but they put in a lot of the groundwork for the whole G-Funk, you know, pioneering that whole sound. You know, Dre gets a lot of credit for it, and Dre obviously did his thing with it. There's no doubt about that.
Right.
But for Hutch and the guys in Above the Law, who have had the foresight or the talent and whatever you want to call it to blend those elements together that created G-Funk. I mean, you got to give props to them. You have to. You can't forget them. You know what I mean? And Laylaw will go on to produce records for Tupac. You know, he did, you know, the California Love. You know, he did, I can't think the name of the song now, but he had another one for Tupac. But, you know, Laylaw was a huge backbone for a lot of that stuff that came out of the West like that. So, rest in peace, Laylaw.
Yeah, man. Yeah, man. That was one individual. It was. That's one individual we regret that we didn't have a chance to get on the show that we would have really loved to have had. In terms of also being an accomplished blogger as well, Chad, what did you find in terms of not only interviewing these people, but also writing about them as well, because it's a totally different type of discipline and a more intimate aspect of it when you're actually putting pen to paper, figuratively speaking, or keys to screen in terms of typing, and really really telling the story in terms of what you're trying to convey to the audience, because your shit is like mad diverse in terms of the array of people that you've written about. You wrote about NB Mill, man. I mean, he's like one of the young young guns coming out of the Northern California section. Was it Richmond? I think it's Richmond he's from. Is it Stockton or Richmond?
Stockton.
You know, Muddy Boy Nell, and he has like been blazing it for the past couple of years. You know,
right.
I mean, tell us about that in terms of getting into the writing aspect of it and how you find, you know, these young guns before they really get known, or getting, you know, writing about them when they're really beginning to blaze up.
You know, I just, for what I do, you know, I don't try to mimic or copy, you know, anything else that's going on. I mean, obviously there's going to be some, you know, some stories or some articles that are going to be, you know, organic news, you know, that's just kind of out there. But, you know, I really try to find the stuff that, you know, these other websites or platforms are not reporting on. You know what I mean? It's easy to do the clickbait thing and just run up your views and you know, and do all that kind of stuff. And that's not why I do it. You know, I want to give, you know, the spotlight, and I want to shine that light on, you know, what interests me and what I'm a fan of, you know. So, you know, a lot of stuff that a lot of these, you know, artists do or put out, a lot of it will fly under the radar unless there's some kind of, you know, clickbait story that somebody can attach it to. And I'm just not a fan of that. So I try to find, you know, a different perspective with what I write about that's not the common perspective that's, you know, that's out there on some of these other platforms. And, you know, as far as, like, some of these new guys that are coming out, like you just mentioned, MB Nell and all them, it's not so much that I'm finding them, but it's they're finding me. And, you know, they'll hit my inbox with something, or, you know, they'll reach out to me you know, with a video or a song that they've got or whatever. And, you know, I like it. And, you know, my platform's not huge. My platform's not, you know, this grandiose, you know, top media site or whatever. But, you know, I've been getting a lot of love and a lot of support from a lot of guys. Like, you know, Snoop has reposted some of my stuff. You know, Snoop Dogg, you know, Battle Cat, you know, Fred Wreck, Too Short, you know, just a lot of different, you know, guys, Cocaine, you know, a lot of these people, you know, I've been getting a lot of support, a lot of love for what I'm doing. And these guys, you know, they're reaching out to me. And I'm just, you know, I'm just playing my small part in helping them achieve, you know, what it is they're trying to do. You know, they're trying to get their videos out. They're trying to get their music out, you know, get it seen, get it heard. You know, if I can help in some small way, you know, that's what I'm doing. You know, maybe part of that is derived from when I used to do publicity and PR, you know, and maybe I'm coming from that kind of perspective with it. But that's just what I do. You know, I'm not into the whole clickbait thing. I try not to do things that stir up, you know, beef between people. You know, it's for me, it's about the music. And you know, and just putting the love back out there, you know, for these artists and for these producers, and that's what I do.
Yeah, that's like a real challenge for a lot of up and coming content creators now, because they like, there's many like you that have knowledge of what these guys do in regards to their contributions to the culture, but the challenge is making it interesting, making it juicy, so where people can click in. And that's why they got to put, like, extra on the titles, even though it may make an artist feel a sort of way. But they looking at it like, man, I got to get on. I got to get this clip. I got to get my article, get my interview out there. Not knowing what it could really bring and for future reference, because, you know, at the end of the day, these guys are street guys. So now you're bringing a different type of funk. Like, yeah, you get in the views, but it ain't really worth it at the end, because we've seen that as proof with the vibe issue. Like, with the vibe issue, when they put East versus West without really putting, like, a context to it.
Right. Yeah, and that's, you know, those are the kinds of things I try to stay away from. You know, I mean, if the artist themselves is, you know, like, if I'm doing an interview or something like that, and they put that out there, then that's, you know, that's for them to do that. That's not for me to do that. And I'm not going to stir that kind of stuff up. And I don't do what I do, you know, for all the clickbait and, you know, the salacious headlines and things like that. You know, I try to keep it very simple. And like I said, I like to write about things that interest me and that I'm a fan of. And hopefully that translates, you know, out for those artists and those producers. And, you know, some of my articles have been, you know, cited, you know, in books. Some of my interviews have been, you know, cited in books as well. Other platforms have credited, you know, the news for me, or an article or an interview that I did. You know, they've highlighted that, you know, on their sites as well. So, you know, I think what I do has been successful for me in terms of you know, what my expectations are, and that's, you know, that's really all I'm in it for, is just you know, like I said, you know, writing about what I'm interested in.
Now, Ed, it's no small feat that you have legends going out looking for you, because that means they respect you as a journalist and they trust your platform, because in so many aspects of it, promotion is everything. You talked about you used to do A&R promotion, which I did not know until you just told us. So we talked prior to, you know, King, you know, yourself and myself, we talked prior to. So please tell us a little bit about that promotion, the promotions that you used to do, and how you got into that. Because, we here for all of it. Because we got some questions about
that, too. That's just something that just kind of fell into my lap, I guess, you know, kind of organically. you know, doing the interviews and things like that, because, you know, my interview has been published, you know, obviously WCNN, Hip Hop DX, Ambrosia, All Hip Hop, you know, in places like that. But, you know, the PR aspect, really just, it just happened kind of organically. I couldn't even tell you what the first, you know, like real kind of project or whatever that I did with that, because it everything just seemed to kind of flow, you know, into each other. But I've handled, you know, some PR for, you know, like EA Ski. You know, I broke the record that he did with Ice Cube, called Please. I think that was released back in like 2010, 2011.
Yeah.
So I did that. I did rest in peace to MC Breed. Right before he passed away, we were, you know, we were talking. He wanted me to handle, you know, his PR going forward, because I had gotten him on TMZ. For at the time, you know, he was going through his kidney issues and stuff like that, and collapsed on the basketball court. So, unfortunately, I got the last interview that he ever did. I was able to, you know, get that last interview, and then he passed away about a month later. But he was super excited, you know, about this new project that he was working on, and, you know, being on TMZ, you know, super excited about that. And he wanted to continue working with me. And unfortunately, he passed away before we could do anything else. But, you know, I've done stuff like that. I was actually handling, a lot of the PR for the Wide Awake Entertainment Death Row Records brand. Back when Wide Awake, you know, bought the rights to Death Row. So I was handling the projects for OFPB, the Crooked Eye project that came out, Sam Sneed, LBC Crew, you know, and all those guys. You know, handled that with John Payne over there for a few years doing that. Actually had a distribution deal through the Wide Awake Death Row thing as well. Didn't really do too much, didn't get a chance to do too much with that, but had the distribution deal, you know, if I needed it, if I wanted to exercise it. But, you know, handle a lot of different projects. You know, I work with Chris the Glove Taylor, multi-platinum producer out of L.A. Worked with Dre, worked with King T and Nas. Handled PR for Sir Jinx, legendary producer for Ice Cube and Exhibit, and MC Ren, obviously, you know, NWA. You know, getting them on different platforms and facilitating different, you know, different media looks for them. Chris the Glove, Sir Jinx, and MC Ren, they were on a documentary through the BBC that was hosted by Sharon Osbourne. I was able to get them on that. Done a lot of work with the DOC over the years, got him into Playboy magazine for an award-winning article in their 2013 issue. Just a lot of different you know, media opportunities that were presented to me, or that I went out and facilitated for some of these guys. And you know, it's been a blessing, and it's been an amazing ride, you know, to have done those things, you know.
Yeah,
and we talking about one thing, straight promotions. We talking about straight promotions, man. Like going to the offices and going to the radio shows, going getting the backstage access to the concerts. Promotional game is so much easier now than it was then. I'll tell you that.
Oh yeah, no doubt. No doubt.
What do artists have to understand, Chad, about in terms of how to properly get promotion? Because we see in this day and time, in an automated age, that everybody wants to do shenanigans instead of having real substance, and they want to be slapstick as opposed to serious. But as we've learned, because, you know, the King used to do this himself, so he knows in terms of writing write-ups for artists, and reviews, you as well as promotions, because both of y'all come from that journalism aspect of it. What do artists have to understand about the aspect of what it means to have yourself properly branded and to make sure you have the right people working in tandem with you to ensure that you get to these right outlets?
Well, I think you just said it right there. I mean, you got to surround yourself with people who have, you know, your best interests, you know, in mind, and people that that can help you get to where you want to get to. You know, and like you said, you know, a lot of people use shenanigans and gimmicks, you know, to get, you know, certain views or certain looks. And, you know, I'm not saying that that's right or wrong, because I think just throughout history of just entertainment and music, like, people have done certain things to stay relevant or to become relevant by utilizing gimmicks or certain shenanigans, like you said, you know, to do. But in my experience, and especially with working with some of the people that I have, and a lot of people that I've worked with were already, you know, established artists, you know, kind of in the industry. And maybe some of them were, you know, had that spotlight on them for a little while or something like that. But, you know, it's really about staying the course. You know, if you're just true to yourself and true to what you're doing, you know, I think doors can open for you, and I think good things, you know, good things will happen. You know, I don't want to say that gimmicks are bad, but I don't want to necessarily say that they're good either. I guess it just really depends on what it is that you're doing. You know, I've had guys that, you know, they shut down the freeway out in L.A. and put on a show just right there in the middle of L.A. traffic. You know, they just shut the whole freeway down. You know, and that was a way for them to get a little bit of attention. So it's just I think it's like, you know, kind of like what you said. It's just, you know, get a team around you that has your best interests at heart. And just, you know, man, just, you know, if it's music, you know, just make good music, you know, and make music that you know, you want to make. Don't make music because it's the hot thing that's selling right now. Make your thing, you know, and stay that course.
Yeah, and that's important because you really have to understand your vision of it. Now, this is where it gets dicey in terms of promotions, because when you have shows, especially for our platform, you know, some artists, we're not going to mention no names on this show because that ain't what we do, but we've had some artists who thought that we were too small in terms of maybe what they felt was a platform for them, which is fine with us because we've had legends on our show, which we're going to beat our chest about, you know, but you have some people that think that certain platforms are not big or it's not enough of an audience. How important is it for an artist to reach out to every market in terms of getting on as many platforms as they can to get their name out there?
I think you're doing yourself a disservice if that's the outlook, is that, you know, if a platform or an outlet reaches out to you and the first thing you think of is, well, how big are they? I think you're doing yourself a disservice because, in my opinion, for most things, any publicity is good publicity. You know, any exposure you can get is good exposure, whether you're an up-and-coming artist or whether you're an established artist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's just my opinion. I've been turned down, you know, from people before, you know, especially like with my podcast, you know, about wanting to come up on the podcast because, you know, well, what kind of numbers are you getting and, you know, how many listenership do you have and, you know, all this other kind of stuff. And I'm like, you know, if you got to ask me all those questions, then you're not who I want to have on my show. You know what I mean? So it kind of goes hand in hand because then, you know, once your show or once your platform grows, and which has happened to me, you know, those, that same artist that turned you down is turning around and wanting you to have them on their show.
You
know,
never know,
and so
who's
it's kind of funny when the tables turn like that, you know.
And they do turn, you know what I'm saying?
The funny thing with us, I mean to cut you off, T-Mans, but you know,
I ain't gonna lose my
train of thought. But the funny thing about us is, we'll pitch it to them, and these managers, they'll look at us first of all, and they'll be like, "Well, this show may be a little bit too small for you. How much is the budget?" So I was like, okay, so this is the new part of the game, I guess. So I just left it at that. So this is how Monkey See Monkey Do His Business is. We start posting up photos of who we met, you know, artists we kicked it with, legends that gave us shout-outs on the show. I just started posting that up on Instagram. And I think what happened was we booked one artist. I don't know if it was Cassidy. I don't know if it was him, but it was to Cassidy, and then we had Billy Danz afterwards. I mean, my timing could be a little bit off. That same manager came through like, "Oh, man, I didn't know you knew all these people like that. Let's work." I said, "I'm good."
Yeah. Yeah.
Now
I'm good.
Yeah. Now we got to ask you this too, Chad, because this has happened to us. Have you ever had somebody try to hit you talking about you had to pay them to bring them on?
I think that has only happened to me one time. Most of the time, 99% of the time, you know, it's just, you know, it goes the way it should go. There's been that
right.
I think it's just been the one time where somebody said, you know, that they wanted me to pay them to have them on my show. And I didn't do that. And I still haven't interviewed that person. But, you know, everybody else that I've ever interviewed, like, that's never been an issue. And I've interviewed, a lot of people. You know, I'm not one that likes to go out and toot my own horn, but sometimes you just gotta toot that motherfucker, you know? And
that's true.
I've done interviews with Chuck D and Too Short, Fred Wreck, EA Ski, Ice Cube, Ant Banks, man, it's just been a lot. MC Ren, Sir Jinx, just a bunch of people. And so, you know, when somebody that I reach out to, you know, responds that way, you know, I don't get negative about it or anything, but I just politely decline. Like, you know, that's not what I'm in this for. You know what I mean? But thankfully, you know, I haven't really come across, that type of issue.
Yeah. Pretty much, we think also, too, that kind of cheapens the journalistic integrity of it because
sure.
Me and my brother, we've talked about this many a time off air about we, once again, you know, we keep reiterating this on Off the Cuff. We're never going to blast nobody in terms of, you know, situations that may not have been the best. We don't do that on this show, but we do use it as a reference point because there was a very well-known artist last year who we reached out to and his manager, you know, and it took about pretty much, this is over a period of about 2-3 weeks we were talking. So the manager gets back with us, you know, because I was running point, you know, as King said, I'd be the boots on the ground, just like he'd be, you know, the Paul Heyman of this thing, you know, the Al Heyman, you know, so, you know, we make the money moves in terms of making it happen. So anyway, I digress. But anyway, we're talking to this individual. I'm talking to him primarily. So he says that he'll bring the artists on, but we got to pay because I was telling him, because this is what we have learned for all aspiring podcasters out there. You always want to make it very, very clear in terms of how you do things. That way, if some fuckery does come up, it ain't your fault. Why? Because you explained everything to them from top to bottom, to the nook and cranny, to the rooter, to the tooter, to the nuts and bolts. You've laid out everything.
Right.
Don't want to get too long-winded, but, you know, basically what I told him, this was a phone interview, you know, this, you know, and because I guess, and I told him this earlier, I think the weed and kush might have got to him too much. Anyway, so I'm telling him he doesn't have to, you know, it's not a traveling show, because for some reason, somewhere along the line, he thought this was a traveling. I'm like, no, you know, he's just going to call in and we just go from there. But then he says, well, you know, he wants to be paid. Now, we didn't even get to the numbers part about how much he wants to be paid. So he's like, and also, too, that he's going to be doing a show that night, so he may only give us an hour. So I get by to King. I'm going to let King carry the rest of this, because I'm going to let King say what he had to say after I got back with him about it. Go ahead, bro.
Oh, yeah, I know what we're talking about, man. I'm like, hold up. I had to read the room, first of all. And you know me being the type of guy, I'm like, let me read the book. Let me read the Billboard chart. Let me read when the last time you've been outside.
Yeah.
Let me read what your last video did for you to make these demands to us. Let me read your features. Like, what are we doing here to make that type of charge on us? Like, if anything, from the way we're looking at it, I'm like, brother, you could use all type of press you can get. You don't have nothing out there. Last time we seen you popping off, 50 and Kanye were going at it, the sales off. You know what I'm saying? That was 2007.
Right.
Street DVDs were popping when you was hot. So I had to, like, hold up, man. Let me clear this up again. I had to cut the music off of this. You mean you just tell me this guy, he ain't been outside in almost 10 years and he's going to charge us for an interview? And then going to dictate what to talk about? Hell no. No.
Right.
This guy's crazy.
He's not doing that. Yeah, and it was like, okay, so.
I'm sorry.
This is the reason.
I had to hit him with this, man.
Mm-hmm.
I had to hit him with this, man. No.
And there's a reason, because this has happened to us a few times. Now, for those that don't understand our principle on this show, because we haven't really said it in full, so we're going to give this in explicit detail why we don't go that route. What I just said earlier about it compromises and corrupts the artistic and journalistic integrity of what we do. But this is also something as well, situation where it's more of a contrived and even somewhat of a coerced action. See, for someone to do an interview, it shouldn't be coerced. Somebody should want to come on just because they want to do it. You know, because that's when it's the best content, when it's genuine and people really, really, really fuck with your shit. But in the extreme nuclear option case, if we would even entertain paying somebody, we're going to dictate the terms in terms of you can't run from nothing we ask.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you gotta put it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I told my partner, man, look, okay. You want to promote the show. You're going to have to give us. We're going to set up the flyer. You're going to have to promote the show every day. We're going to need a drop, a video drop, a radio drop, whatever you want to do. You got to be there on time. No question could go unanswered. We ain't playing that type of game.
No.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt.
Okay, we're going to do business. We're going to do business.
Thankfully, for me, I've never really had to go through that. You know, I guess, you know, I've just been kind of blessed in that way, but that's never come across my plate except for the one time. Most of the time, it's, you know, if I reach out to them, you know, it's you know, the favor or whatever is usually returned. Or, you know, which is also the case, a lot of them have reached out to me about you know, wanting to do an interview or come up on the podcast or something like that. So, the whole paying thing for all that, they can miss me with that.
And it's ironic too, y'all, because this particular artist that we're talking about, you look on his IG and his Facebook like he living large, like he doing it, like that money, whatever money he made back in the day, like he's still eating off of it. But also too, it's like that tells you it can be smoke and mirrors. Now, we can name the people that we've had on the show that are legends, and God bless them, and we love them so much for coming on. Big Hutch, we've had him twice. Cocaine.
Mm-hmm.
Shout out DJ Yella, the legend of NWA. We had him on the show.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? We've had Serge King. We've had Billy Dance. We've had Mike Geronimo. We've had Cassidy. We've had the late, great Louis Rankin. We've had the late, great Badass. We've had the late, great G.I. Joe. We ain't paid none of these people, and we had great interviews with them.
Yeah.
You know?
That just goes back to what I was saying earlier. You know, just stay true to what you're doing. You know what I'm saying? And good things will always happen. What episode are you guys on now?
We're on, what's this King? How many shows is this we got now, King? About what, 500 and, we're right at what, about 540 now?
Yeah, so, you know what I'm saying? Like, y'all are doing your thing. So, you know, that something like that, I wouldn't even pay attention to because, I mean, you guys are obviously, you know, doing your thing and have been doing it. You know what I mean? So, like I said earlier, you know, you just got to stay true to what you're doing and, you know, the blessings will happen, you know?
And we are blessed indeed. We cannot complain. Now, Ted, in terms of being a journalist, how do you feel now about the transition from print media to digital in terms of where the magazines are not as prevalent as they once were, albeit not extinct, but not necessarily the priority? I'm a book nerd. King is a book nerd. We're both book nerds. So we really treasure the art of the written word and the print media. Of course, like XXL. Shout out to John Blaston Game, founder of Word Up Magazine, and so many other titles as well, publications. How do you feel about how it has changed now in terms of how articles, especially with you being a writer as well, how they are disseminated through media?
Well, obviously the digital aspect has obviously changed it. Made it a lot, you know, a lot easier. You know, anybody can get a website, anybody can get a podcast. You know, it's just like sometimes with music right now, like anybody can make a beat, you know, because it's been made so easy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there's that. You know, XXL, The Source, you know, those magazines and those platforms. You know, I can remember, man, going to bookstores, whatever, and finding the latest XXL, finding the latest Source, finding the latest Word Up magazine, you know, whatever it was. So I missed that aspect of, you know, just like with CDs and the music going digital. It's like, yeah, so easy. Just pull out your phone and you got an app, boom, you got the next, you know, you got this album or you got this song. I'm so physical with stuff like that. Like, I like the physical media. Like, I like the magazines. I like and enjoyed and still reminisce, because I can still remember when I went and picked up, you know, Tupac's All Eyes on Me. I can still remember when I went up and picked out, you know, Shorty the Pimp, you know, every Tuesday, you know, hitting the record stores. So
yeah, man.
While it's made it easier, you know, I'm not going to necessarily say that it's made it better, but it's definitely made it easier for people to do the things like that I do or that you guys were doing. That, so, you know, I think they can and I think they are coexisting, you know, both the physical aspect and the, you know, the digital aspect as well. So, you know, and for me, you know, for what I do, I mean, the, you know, that digital is helpful. You know, I've got my website, I've got my podcast, And I've been able to do, you know, some pretty big things with that.
Yeah. And when we think about it, too, from that level of how the digital game goes, because this is something that a lot of people don't always understand in that aspect, because the digital does not always entail every album being out there, because there's a lot of records that are not even on digital outlets.
Oh, yeah.
And that's where, you know, and eBay has just become like, oh, God, eBay has just become the Wild West, because when you're looking at how some of those records are in terms of some of those records that are out of print and how much they're going for, and you can't even find them on digital outlets. I mean, hell, I mean, you've had songs pulled off digital outlets. I remember some years ago, shout out to our Asian brothers and sisters. You know, when the Asian hate thing was really big in terms of when it was really getting a lot of media attention, you know, of course, on, you know, YG's first album, My Crazy Life, where he had that song Meet the Flockers, and he has that line about, you know, Asians getting robbed. They pulled that song off iTunes.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, when Ice Cube did, you know, No Vaseline, when he had the line, because you let a Jew break up my crew, they bleeped you out.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it was like, it was nuts. Better get your sense.
And this is my thing about the digital world. You know, when you talk about Apple Music and Spotify and stuff like that, the thing that I miss is, you know, because, yeah, you can go and get the album, right? You can go and pick up, you know, Death Certificate. You can go and pick up, you know, Straight Outta Compton. You can go and pick up, you know, the Get In Where You Fit In, you know, whatever, right? But what I miss are the singles that would have the remixes.
Yeah.
Right? So you would have whatever
the maxi singles.
Yeah, yeah. So you would have whatever song, right? You would have Two Shorts, I'm a Player. But they got a whole other version of that song on the single, like the cassette or the maxi, you know, the maxi CD single that came out. You know, they'd have that. They had, you know, all these different remixes. You can't find those remixes. Like, I would love, you know, with having Apple Music or Spotify, to be able to just go and boom, here's this remix, and listen to the remixes. You know, you don't have that. You know, Ant Banks had a dope ass remix of Parlayin', but the only way you can hear it is on the vinyl. You know, or if you take, you know, if you have like the little conversion thing where you can take vinyl and put it as an MP3, but then you got to have a separate, you know, app on your phone to play it. You know what I'm saying? So you gotta kind of do that work to listen to those remixes. You know, I wish that these labels or the artists, you know, especially if they control their catalog, you know, if they would bust those out, put them on, you know, make them available, you know, on the Apple Music and Spotify's or, you know, whatever the platform is. That's what I miss, because I remember going to the record stores, man, and, you know, I couldn't wait to see what the new singles and all that came out, because I knew they were probably either going to have like a remix or, you know, they were going to have some kind of B-side that, you know, wasn't even on the album. It was just a song that was just, you know, an unreleased song, you know, but you can't find those gems unless you already had, you know, the physicals, which, you know, with a lot of stuff that I listen to, I've got all the physical, either CDs or tapes or whatever. But yeah, that's what I wish would happen with the digital world. And actually, you know, there's a lot of dope soundtracks that aren't available on, you know, on digital. You know what I'm saying? There was the Show soundtrack that had the song by Tupac, On My Block, and like Bone Thugs and Harmony,
man,
Everyday Sound.
One of the greatest soundtracks ever.
Yeah, it's not. I can't find it nowhere. You know what I'm saying? The Dangerous Ground, the Ice Cube movie. That was a dope soundtrack. You had Too Short, Underground Kings, Ice Cube had a record on there. I think Mac 10 had a record on there. Like, that was a dope soundtrack. But you can't find it.
Menace to Society. I mean, when you look at, I mean, you know, I mean, it's like, It's, oh God, I mean, and that's just one thing too, y'all, that I missed in terms of hip hop, because when we look at the movies back in the day, even if it wasn't necessarily a quote unquote black movie, you would still have some hip hop like The Corruptor back in the day with Mark Wahlberg and Chow Yun Fat. And that soundtrack was, you know, was not necessarily a black movie. The movie was not a black movie, but I mean, God, I mean, the soundtrack was just,
yeah,
whoa. I mean,
yeah, and some of these big soundtracks are not available, and you can't enjoy that, you know, that music unless you already had that CD from back in the day, and you know, like I said, you can convert it over to MP3 and use a special player, you know, music player app on your phone to play it, you know. So cool. I wish, especially with a lot of the game now being much more independent, you know, and the artists have much more say as, you know, as to what they do with their music. And I wish they'd go and put some of these, you know, soundtracks, remixes, or these, you know, these B-side songs that you can't find nowhere, you know.
Shout out to Cornega, because I hit him on IG. Because, of course, a couple of years ago, he did for 2001 and 2002, when The Realness and The True Meaning were released. And a couple of years ago, he did the 20-year anniversary for both of those albums. And, of course, The Realness 2 is just fucking bananas. I've been standing that dude's inbox because I'm like, dude, when do we get a physical? When do we get a physical? Are we going to get a physical? He's like, okay. But when you look at Mega with what he did on the independent scale when he dropped those albums, like, because for a minute on eBay, the shit was insane in terms of those CD prices, and they're still kind of high depending on it. The monetary value has gone down because those, even in a small scale, the cassettes are back in circulation. And I think he did a vinyl re-release as well, but some of those joints, like in the Legal Hustle joint he did, the album was, it's depending on where you go up there, it's you can get a good price for it, even with the Testament, which I have the original, and I have the one that was originally, it was eventually released, but it's like some of that shit, man, it's like, it's just a lot. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
It's a lot. I mean, and that's where
you're looking at, like, how much a lot of this stuff goes for.
Right.
But, you know, you don't really know how good you got it in terms of those physicals until you go online and then you see how much they're worth. And even the magazines, some of those old source magazines, I was looking at one from 1991. I think somebody's selling that one for $500.
Oh, wow.
I want to say it may be the Luke issue from 1991, I believe.
Okay.
And, yeah, but a lot of that stuff now is becoming valuable, especially because as we've seen the culture progress over the years, there has been a real, 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 I don't want to say resurgence because I don't think it ever died, but it's like an appreciation. There's a reappraisal of what people may have had as just kind of a passe thing, but then they find out the magazines, the albums, these are like real tangible testaments to an era of some of the best music that was released. Like with King T's albums, you can't even find his albums anymore because they're out of print. And
right.
Some of those albums on eBay are going for like $70, $90, $100.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's crazy,
when you,
man.
Yeah, when you talk, have you ever talked to the albums, I mean, artists, Chad, about how they feel about some of those albums going out there on the secondary market and about how, you know, some of those went out of print and how many of them actually own their masters to their records?
I've never really talked with any of them about that. I mean, I know, you know, there's just in some, you know, some private conversations. You know,
right.
We've talked about, you know, certain
albums or whatever, you know, suddenly being, you know, $300 or, you know, $200 or something like that because it's out of print. You know, as far as, you know, if they own their masters and do this and that, I've never really gotten involved in that conversation with them because in my mind, that's, you know, that's not my business. You know what I'm saying?
Understood.
If they want to know, it, you know, if they want to own their masters, cool. If they want to put the stuff out, cool. Or if they just want to have their masters and not do anything with it, you know, that's cool. You know, that's their work. That's their, you know, their property to do whatever they want with. So, you know, I've asked them, you know, certain people maybe questions about, you know, maybe why this certain album or this certain song isn't, you know, isn't available, you know, digitally. But again, you know, they'll just tell me, you know, it's, you know, something with the labels, you know what I mean? So, but yeah, I mean, that's the extent of that. You know, I was a big fan of the Lil Bay Oakland duo Bad Influence, which was Rappin' Ron and then Diddly Dog that was down with Too Short and Dangerous Crew and all that stuff. And I noticed that their record, their CD, the Bad Influence CD, I think was sitting, it was either on eBay or Discogs or something like that, but it was sitting at like, you know, $200, $300. You know what I mean? Mm. And that, you know, and they're a group that, you know, unfortunately didn't get to, you know, to see, you know, their, you know, what they were doing, you know, really blossom. You know what I'm saying? They were still very much a, you know, like a localized, you know, group at the time. You know, I think they were becoming, you know, a little bit more before Rapid Ron passed away. Rest in peace to Ron, who coincidentally is also in my top five, you know, greatest rappers. But, you know, to see that their record is worth that much, you know, that's crazy because, you know, I wasn't, I guess, aware that maybe they had that that big of a following yet. You know, I knew that if they were getting there and they were growing, obviously, because, you know, they were associated with Too Short and Ant Banks and that group, you know, that was, you know, doing their thing. But, you know, when I saw that, I was like, man, that's crazy. You know, $200 for their CD, you know, that, you know, and I look at some of these other CDs out there that are, you know, like you're saying, like King T and all that, it's out of print. Crazy that they're worth $200 or $300. And I have all those CDs, you know? So, yeah, that's crazy to see that.
It's wild because I was actually looking at E-40 album, The Click, Down and Dirty. Now, for those that know, there are two versions of that record because the original Down and Dirty, I think, has like 18, 19 tracks. But the thing was, this is the kicker. This is the Down and Dirty album that was released independently before they got their distribution deal with Jive in 1995. Or was it 93?
Okay, yeah.
So the one that was put out on the label on Jive was when they did their distribution deal is a totally different album than the one that they put out originally. Because if you were not out in the Bay catching them, slanging them tapes back in the day, I think I saw the original Click Down and Dirty album on cassette, I think it was going for like $70.
Wow.
And I think the CD was going for like $200.
Yeah.
Because I know the
crazy.
Mailman.
Yeah, that's the bad
the
part.
Digital.
Yeah, that's the only bad part about it. That's the only thing bad about with those albums going like that. Now, keep in mind when these guys were creating the art, they didn't really think about business. There was more so a lot of them coming up, they didn't really know what they was doing. They were just creating this thing as it went because, you know, they was looking at rap as a fad. And it was probably going to be gone in a couple of years. Little did they know that it was going to make an impact like it did. So they probably focused more so on creativity and the art and less on the business side. And unfortunately, this is what the results is now because now you see these albums going on sale and they're not getting a piece of it. Now, you probably got some artists that handle their business real well and they distributed their albums for almost like $200 to $300, and they get all the money. But it's unfortunate that a lot of people that contribute heavily to the art can't really eat off of it. So that's the good thing about the information age today.
Right. I don't think there's any artist that capitalized as much off of it in the information age, in terms of really finding his audience grassroots, than Nipsey Hussle. Rest in peace. It is still an urban legend. Well, not even urban, because it really happened. It's still a legend with the Crenshaw mixtape, because when his label deal with Sony didn't work out, this dude hit the block and was like, I'm going to do it myself. And when you have Jay-Z buy 100 copies of your album just because he's recognizing your grind and appreciates your hustle with it, that's major. And that's still like one of the greatest hand-to-hands I've ever seen. You know, we were amazed. And it's like, damn near, 10, 12 years ago? Shout out to Mike and Keys, 1500 or nothing. All those guys were working on those early projects with Nip. They were doing something at the time, all money in. It was just still amazing to think about, y'all, because Nip saw something in terms of the market where he reached directly to the people and they rocked with him. From your public relations experiences, Chad, how important is it for an artist to really get that love from their hometown? What do artists have to understand in terms of, you know, really, really, really making music that is going to reach the masses outside of it?
I think it's pretty important to have your hometown behind you. You know, if your hometown don't even support you, how are you going to get anybody else to support you? You know what I'm saying? I mean, I know it can happen, but I'm just thinking, you know, for me, I think it's really important for your hometown and the people in your hometown to support you. I mean, look at, you know, all you got to do is look at history with that. You know what I mean? Like, you know, NWA, you know, Dr. Dre, Snoop Dogg with Long Beach, Dre and NWA with Compton, you know, Compton's Most Wanted with Compton, DJ Quick, same thing, you know, E-40 with Vallejo, same thing, you know, Too Short in Oakland, same thing, like where they're from and their cities, you know, Nelly, you know, St. Louis, you know what I mean?
Right, right.
You know, Outkast, you know, down there in Atlanta, Scarface with Houston, you know, the Ghetto Boys, like, you know, your city, you know, that support, you know, I think is really important. You know, I know people can make it without it, but you know, for me, my experience and what I've seen and what I've heard, you know, having your city behind you is big, real big. So I think a lot of artists, you know, need to embrace that and embrace their communities and be a part of their communities and, you know, and get that support from them, definitely.
Yeah, and artists have to understand this too, y'all. There's no meritocracy in terms of where you come from that you're automatically going to be liked just because you come from there. Because the thing is, if you're really serious about it, you're trying to put your city on the map, which means you got to rep your city the right way. And your music has to be something that everybody can get behind. And I think that's what some artists, and I know this is going to be a tricky field to navigate with the minds in it. It's like with some artists, they're just okay with being local, famous, because they feel like as long as they have a certain celebrity in their hometown, it's like you're trying out for the NFL, and you may be great in college, but once you get to that pro level, because NFL only has 1,696 players in it, so it's the best of the best. When you're looking on an average of college players that graduate a football team between three divisions, that's roughly about maybe 3,000 or 4,000 players over those three divisions that graduate every year. So you figure less than 2% are going to make it to the league. So there is a real defined difference between who is really good and who is really, really, really great, to where their music will stand out. And not only does their immediate hood embrace it, but it gets out there. And there's a lot to this, because this is where people like yourself, this is like people where us, where we come in. If we know about you outside of your city, that means you've done something, you know, in terms of you have an audience that has taken the time to read the blogs, knows about you, and rocks with you. But if you're not getting any exposure outside of your city, it's like you're not moving anywhere with it. And it's not to diss, because I'm never going to disparage or discourage anybody from their dreams. But it's also a situation where you have to be realistic about the outcome of where that dream is going to go. And music is a very finicky taste for a lot of people, like food. It's about how people will accept it. And if you don't have that palate that everybody wants to have a buffet on, you're going to be starving. When you look at, from your experiences, Chad, what recent artists in memory have you seen in terms of their independent hustle that you were like, wow, like this individual really has something going that's really heavy?
Oh, man. Recent history?
We got time. Yes, we got time.
I don't know, but you know,
I look at things
like this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I look at a guy like MC Breed, right?
Mm-hmm.
Here's a guy that until he came out, you know, I didn't know anything about Flint, Michigan, right? And here comes MC Breed out of the Midwest, and you know, suddenly it's you know, MC Breed in the DFC, you know, Flint, Michigan, you know, ain't no future in your frontin', like all that stuff. Like it just came out of nowhere, right? So I look at it like, you know, a guy like MC Breed is textbook for that. You know what I'm saying? Like really, really hustling and really doing what he's got to do to get his break, get his music out there. And do the damn thing, right? So if we don't have MC Breed, and this is a conversation I've had with some other people, you know, if we don't have MC Breed coming out of Flint, Michigan, do we have a Kid Rock who would later come out and his first record was with Too Short? Like, I don't know that a lot of people know that. Like, Kid Rock first came up with Too Short. Too Short produced two records on Kid Rock's very first album. You know, if we don't have MC Breed, do we have Eminem? I don't know. I mean, obviously, you know, there's Motown, you know, in Detroit and all that kind of stuff, but, you know, Motown wasn't hip-hop. You know, so MC Breed really kicked that door open for Michigan, Detroit, you know, Flint, you know, like that whole area up there. You know, that's – he doesn't get the recognition for that. You know? You know, DOC putting Dallas on the map as a hip hop area, right? DOC, you know, and then the next thing you know, you've got Erotic D that comes out and some of the people that came out of, you know, that came out of Dallas, you know, you got Too Short out of Oakland. Before Too Short came out, you know, Oakland was not on the map for hip hop. You know, and Too Short has been doing it since 1983. Longer or as long as Ice-T was doing it in L.A. or Dr. Dre was doing his stuff with the Wrecking Crew, you know, in L.A. You know, Short was doing it just as long, if not longer. You know, rapping Forte put San Francisco on the map. Before Forte, you know, hip-hop-wise, what do we know about San Francisco? E-40 with Vallejo. What do we know about Vallejo? Spice One.
That's
Hayward.
True.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So a lot of these guys, you know, Scarface and Ghetto Boys, you know, down in Houston, you know, same thing. You know, as far as hip-hop goes, what do we know about a lot of these cities? St. Louis with Nelly. Like, what do we know about that? You know, we knew about Compton and we knew about L.A. because of Dr. Dre and N.W.A., but then here comes Snoop talking about Long Beach. What do we know about Long Beach? You know, now you got Snoop out of Long Beach, you got Daz, you got RBX. Like, he brought a whole crew up out of that city. You know, so, you know, with hip-hop, especially with a lot of hip-hop, I mean, the hustle is there. And you see it with a lot of these guys that are doing it. They're putting whole cities on their backs and breaking doors down. And you gotta love to see it.
And it shows that more than anything, it shows that their dedication to work, to really, really, because like you said, if you got a vision and it's really a good one in terms of what you're trying to do, you're gonna make it happen. And there's nothing more gratifying, because one thing about social media now, y'all, we got a situation where the artists, they don't have an excuse anymore in terms of back in the day, you had to go through a lot of jumping through hoops, a lot of headaches, hoping and praying that you would get a label. This was just to get a label meeting. And then even then that wasn't guaranteed that you would get a deal. But once you got the record deal, it was like you had to show them why they needed to put money into you.
Mm-hmm.
You have exceptions like EPMD back in the day, because they were their own producers. So all they had to do was get a deal. But they never had to worry about producer money because they took care of their own they took care of all of that themselves. So
right.
That kind of cut that cost out. But there were a lot of artists who really they had to show why this label should invest in them. Now for a lot of artists, for better or for worse, and we always want to keep it positive, you know, you got a lot of artists who are like, okay, I'm going to get out there. Shout out to G Perico, of course, you know, out in South Central, So Way Out
mm-hmm.
Entertainment, you know, The Enterprise. He's killing it right now on that independent level. You know, Mozzie, you know, shout out to him, Free Mozzie, you know, repping 916 in Sacramento. I mean, you know, I first got hit to Mozzie around 2016. And to see what he has done in terms of what he grew from an independent artist to being signed to CMG now with Yo Gotti. But you saw these individuals that really had some hard shit, and it was like the streets loved it, and they just kept working at it.
Yeah.
But that's important, and artists got to understand this is hard work. This isn't going to be, you know, you just laying on your ass, throw a song on YouTube or SoundCloud and just hope that people pay attention to it. And we've seen over the years with some songs, they were kind of big for a minute, but where was the follow-up? And then these artists stated like yesterday's news on the back page.
Yep.
Pretty much when you, all the writing, because we got to, when you look at some of the aspects of journalism and the interviewing aspect, to see artists transition into the podcasting lane, like Nori with Drank Champs, and you did a piece about that. How do you feel about it with guys like him, Fat Joe? Shout out to, of course, Master Ace and his wife, you know, Lachey, you know, and pretty much all of them kind of transitioning to things outside of rap in terms of still being involved mm-hmm. in the culture. How do you feel about that?
I think it's dope. I mean, in a word, I think it's dope. I think it's great to see these guys, you know, being able to transition, you know, into that, because these are guys that are in the culture and of the culture, instead of having people, you know, maybe outside of the culture trying to write about the culture. You know what I mean? You know, I've seen, you know, there's different journalists and different writers and stuff like that that, you know, that I've seen over the years that, you know, it's trying to write about hip hop, but they're coming out of like a like they're trying to do it from like a heavy metal aspect. you know, because that's what they've written about is heavy metal. Now all of a sudden they're trying to write about, you know, some hip-hop shit. And I'm like, that doesn't make sense to me. Because you, not saying that they aren't, you know, hip-hop lovers and are also, you know, just because they're in heavy metal doesn't mean they can be in hip-hop. I'm not saying that. But it just seems, it seems a little off to me. You know what I mean? So to see, like, Fat Joe, to see, you know, Nori and DJ EFN, you know, doing their things with Drink Champs and all that, I think it's amazing, and I think it's great, and I think it's great for the culture. And I think it adds an extra layer, you know, to the culture, because now you got guys who were the artists or were the producers, and now they're part of the, you know, the quote-unquote media, and I think that they're helping kind of give more of an inside look into, you know, the thought processes and the mentalities and, you know, the history of hip hop. And I think it's great all the way around.
Plus, when you mention people coming through from different backgrounds, like, you know, they're coming from the heavy metal crowd. Now, this is my personal opinion. It seemed to me that they're trying to capitalize off the popularity of the culture of hip hop, because nobody really checking for metal like that anymore. I mean, it's still more like a niche following with it, but it's not big as it was. But hip hop, it had expanded to a $1 billion enterprise. So they figured, let me go ahead and take what I know of the rock culture, which is, you know, hardcore partying, drugs and assets, and let me go into this lane.
Right. And I'm not saying that they can't be, you know, that they're not, you know, just as well versed in hip hop as they are in this, maybe in one of these other genres. I'm not saying that at all. But sometimes it just hits me a little weird that, you know, I'm reading articles and it's like, and it's almost like I can tell, you know, who's going to write what article just by the headline. Because it's almost like a clickbait headline. And it's kind of like I'm just not a huge fan of that. You know, if you're going to write about hip hop, you're going to write about rap music, you're going to do those kinds of things, you know, why are we, you know, almost trying to devalue it by almost writing from almost a negative standpoint instead of a more positive standpoint. Like when I read articles, I don't know why, but it's a huge pet peeve of mine. That, and it's not just rap and hip hop. This is in sports media, you know, whatever. It's like whenever something good happens to an artist or to an athlete, right? Just won a national title, right? Just had a platinum record. It's like as soon as something good happens, we can't just leave an article about that. We've got to intertwine in that article some of the bad shit that happened.
Right.
And it's like, why are we doing that? Like, why can't we just celebrate the accomplishment? Why can't we just celebrate, you know, this story? You know, why do we have to say, you know, for an example, and I don't know why I'm using this example, but it just.
It's okay. No, go ahead. Run with it.
You know, I read articles about, you know, like Dr. Dre, right? Let's say Dr. Dre. Dropped an album right now, or was doing the Super Bowl like he did last year, right? Why are we not just celebrating the fact that Dr. Dre is headlining the Super Bowl and, you know, talking about his accolades and his accomplishments and stuff like that? But I'm reading articles that are talking about, you know, Dr. Dre, you know, he's going to, you know, headline the Super Bowl, you know, and he's going to have Snoop Dogg and Eminem and Kendrick Lamar and Mary J. Blige. Oh, and by the way, you know, Dr. Dre just went through this nasty-ass divorce and blah, 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 blah. You remember this episode that he did with Dee Barnes? Like, why are we dragging all this shit up into this article?
Right.
Why are we not
just keeping the article? Go ahead.
Why are we not just keeping the article about this great achievement that Dr. Dre and hip-hop is doing right now? Now, when I read about that, you got to include all this other negative shit that, you know, that has gone on in Dre's life, that, you know, some of the shit was 30 years ago. right? But we're still dragging it up because we feel like, what, we got to tell a complete story? No, we're talking about the Super Bowl. Let's just concentrate on that. But I can almost tell who's writing that article.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely written with a bias plan.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You know what I mean? You can tell how they look. I can tell how they look by the way they word things and stuff. Just like somebody wrote an article on Complex saying that 21 Savage was the best rapper 2022. I'm like, let me look at this guy up, see how he look, man. He like one of the type of guy we probably used to give wedgies in high school. So let me take a look at him.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know about all that, but yeah, I mean, it's, you know, there's definitely a different, you know, outlook, you know, in the media now with certain things. And I just, some of that stuff, and that's why I said, and that's why I said earlier, you know, I write about what interests me and I try to keep it positive and I try to keep it, you know, in a celebratory, you know, kind of thing. I don't like to drag up people's past. I don't like to talk about the negative shit that might be attached to them or whatever. It's, you know what? This dude was a great artist. This dude was a great producer. This dude, you know, is a great lyricist. You know, I talk about, you know, some of the things he's released, you know, some of the albums he's done and stuff like that, and really try to, I don't know if I would say really try to give him the flowers when I'm writing about it, but I'm trying to keep it positive. I don't give a shit about the beef
right. That
he had with this person,
right.
I had with that person. I don't give a shit about the divorce. That's not my business. I don't give a shit. You know what I'm saying? I just certain things like that, like I don't care about it, and I don't think we should care about it. I think what we should care about is celebrating these people for who they are and what they're doing. That's good. You know what I mean? You can't celebrate somebody for handing out turkeys on Thanksgiving Day and then talk about some bad shit that they did in the same fucking article.
Yeah.
Now you've just devalued your whole story, your whole article. And you only did it for the clickbait.
And you're absolutely right, because it cheapens the whole story, because when you're dealing with something, you know, number one, we don't need that revisionist history, because the fact is when shit happens like it does, and you're absolutely right, Chad, when it happens, it happens. When we watched The Defiant Ones on HBO, you know, the documentary about Jimmy Iovine and Dre, and you
right.
know with Dre to this day, it's still... Look, we know that Dre will tell you himself, because it came out of his mouth. Dre will tell you he was out of his fucking mind when he was young, drinking too much and acting crazy. There's other things that we know. We're not saying that on air, of course, but it's like that man has, you know, no matter what his failings or shortcomings has been, the man is one of the greatest producers, the greatest contributors to hip-hop and music in general in world history. You know, I'm like, let's celebrate that man and let him be great. You know what I'm saying?
Right, right.
You know,
and not just
you,
him,
you know,
and not just him, but any of them. You know what I'm saying? Like, you can't write an article or a story or whatever celebrating, you know, the release of an album or the fact that they're headlining this or doing whatever, and then talk about all the bad shit. Like, that doesn't make sense to me. And if that's the type of writer or that's the type of platform that you want to have, then that's the type of platform that I'm not going to pay attention to, you know? And they may have millions of views, millions of readers, but I'm not going to be one of them. And that's just me. That's just my personal taste. Because like I said earlier, I don't do the clickbait shit. I'm not going to say – my headline's not going to read, you know, I don't know, guy who hit – kid in the head with a bottle hands out turkeys on Thanksgiving. Like, wait a minute, what? Like,
yeah.
Just shit like that just don't make sense. You know what I'm saying?
Well, one thing about it, y'all, and we know this, because one thing about it on the show, we've interviewed so many people. We've had guests on the show. We knew certain things about them, and we weren't going to bring it up. We've had former porn stars on the show. We weren't going to bring up all that shit about, you know, this, that, and the other, because we understand it from a bigger picture. that they are people first. And there are certain things, yes, it's a part of their life, but it's not their total life. People have
right.
a multifaceted, diverse, and, you know, experimental existence. We live life and we learn from things. Not everything we do we're going to like, we're proud of, but it's called we make mistakes, we're human, and we grow, we evolve from it. And we have a right to live our best lives, not being constantly reminded of the things we did wrong that may have contributed to shortcomings or even long-term bad outcomes. Nobody needs to have that storm cloud being held over them their entire life. People have a right to move on from things.
Right.
And journalism should be from a perspective of if there's a cautionary tale that is to be said about how people did things that were not the best, then that's fine. But let's not beat people over the head about shit that they've done 30 years ago. After a while, it gets old. And it, after a while, it just seems like you're still digging for something that really, in the broad context, especially if this person has acknowledged their mistake, has apologized, and has been resolved to be a better person because of it, you know, let that person grow. Why is it y'all still want to hold that over them? You know, but that's
well, and some of it,
are. Yeah.
And some of it is, you know, when I see articles like that or whatever, it's like, well, this dude just didn't have nothing to write about.
Yeah.
You know, or this writer, man or woman, didn't have nothing to write about. So they have to put all this stuff in their piece because, I don't know, they got to get 5,000 words or whatever. I mean, I don't know. But it's like, you know, it doesn't even have to be something from 30 years ago. It could be something from last year. Like, we don't need to keep dragging it up. There's Wikipedia.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
And I'm telling you, like, why are we going?
They
be telling the same story
about it every time I read an article about this guy. It doesn't matter who it is. I don't need to keep hearing the same negative shit about that guy.
Right.
About that artist, about that producer, about that entertainer, about that athlete. You know what I'm saying? But celebrate them. Stop trying to devalue it.
Or even if they do some fuckery, let them do their fuckery and then we just ignore
them. Let them deal
like
with
6ix9ine.
Yeah.
Yeah, like with 6ix9ine. You know what I'm saying? I mean, we know he did what he did. But the thing is, it's like, the dude didn't make great music to begin with. And honestly, now he's embraced this whole troll being a troll, but I'm like, dude, so basically, okay, first you went from mediocre to rap. Albeit I understand why he told, given the situation. Shameless plug, shout out to Sean Sotero. Pick up the Dummy Boy book because it tells the whole story. But okay, now 6ix9ine, all right, okay, you know, Tekashi, we get it now. Okay, so you told. But now you're embracing this whole element of negativity about, well, yeah, and it's like, dude, okay, so where's the rest of your career now? You're just going to basically be a self-parody of yourself in terms of the world
right.
elements. And I'm like, and, you
don't
know,
care
you're
long
going to embrace that. Yeah, I mean, but
you know, this
you know,
generation worship the bag.
Yeah.
Yeah, and unfortunately, we're in, you know, the society now is, it's about the drama. It's about the salaciousness. You know, how much more, you know, fuckery or you know, do we want to see? Do we want to read about? Do we want to watch? You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's just, that's just where we're at now. You know what I mean? But like I said before, you know, me doing what I do with my platform, my podcast, my website, you know, whatever, you know, that's my choice to make sure that, you know, I'm putting out the best or writing about the best and talking about, you know, just the music. I'm just trying to keep it about the music. I don't care about all the drama. I don't care about all the, you know, the clickbait type stuff. I don't care about that kind of stuff. You know, if my clickbait is gonna be any clickbait, it's going to be, you know, like what I did, the interview with Chris the Glove, and he was telling me this story about how, you know, an early Madonna was on the stage, right? Like, she wasn't even Madonna yet. And, she was on the stage and got on the stage, you know, with Ice-T and started doing like this whole kind of like, I don't know, some kind of weird shit or whatever. So, you know, that was part of the thing. You know, it was this cool ass story that Crystal Glove was telling. You know what I'm saying? If that's the extent of my clickbait, cool. You know what I mean? Like, if it's a dope story, it's a dope story. You know what I mean? I don't feel like I need to fluff it and start, you know, devaluing it with all this other stuff in it, you know?
Yeah. Now, that goes to the podcast, I mean, where we see certain people getting out there now in terms of how they're seemingly, because I know Key's ready to jump on this one, and I'm going to let them get in like the Road Warriors. We got, you know, some of these podcasters are like picking fights with these people unnecessarily in the name of what they call, and it's basically stupidity and crash test dummy dunceness disguised as journalism, because that ain't no journalism from where we come from. How do you feel about some of these guys getting out here and just, you know, I guess when we look at what we do, because we take it so seriously, it's a situation, we understand it from a level of having respect because we understand what it means to do this, coming from the culture. And you have some people that are really not from it. And their whole thing is, however, they can, because hip-hop is big. We know that. So now it's like a lot of people don't have the love for it. Their thing is, just as long as they can get in on it so they can eat off of it. And that's where the vulture mentality comes in.
Right.
You know, the culture is alive and well. So we don't need no vultures flying around like it's dead in the desert. No, hip-hop is very much alive. We just need to shoot the buzzards down in terms of go buzzard hunting because they live in foul and wipe them out of picture because they're bringing it down. Go ahead, please.
Are you asking me, like, how I feel about it?
Yeah. Like, how do you feel about it? Yeah, what's up? Because I know you and King, go ahead and jump on this, because I know there's a couple people you have in mind that are like, yeah, they're the biggest offenders of this shit.
I'm not going to drop no names about it, but, yeah, there's definitely people out there that do that, and I feel like that's, you know, counterproductive to what the ones who are really trying to do good with their platform. You know what I mean? And unfortunately, like I said just a minute ago, we're living in a society now where it's about the drama. It's about the beefs. It's about the, you know, the clickbait, you know, type headlines and stuff like that, because that's what, you know, society is looking for. You know, that's why we have this whole cancel culture type thing that's come out now. Is everybody's looking for a way to tear people down. Right, wrong, or indifferent, that's the society that we're in now. And, you know, when I'm listening to podcasters or you know, I'm reading an interview or, you know, reading an article, you know, like I said before, you know, for me, that's the biggest turnoff for me is, you know, the first part of the article is good. And then all of a sudden, here comes all this bullshit that has no reason to be in this article, or that has no reason to come up during this interview, you know, or during this podcast. I mean, I get, you know, there's some stuff that, you know, that needs to be asked, you know, as far as, you know, kind of what's going on, because that's news, right? But the dwelling on it and just the oversaturation of it just becomes too much. And so again, like, you know, for what I do, you know, I do it because I love it. I do it because, you know, I enjoy celebrating the culture and what's happening within the culture. You know, we lost, you know, Laylaw, we lost CPO Boss Hogg. You know, we just lost Uncle Chuck from 1500 to Nothing.
Yeah,
you know,
man,
we've lost MC Breed. You know what I'm saying? We've lost so many people. You know, we just lost Dangerous Dane, you know, over the weekend. You know, we've lost so many people that have contributed and done great things in the music industry that for me and in my mind, it's like, man, there's no time for all this, all the bullshit. You know, we need to be uplifting and celebrating people for their accomplishments, not just for what they have done in the past, but what they're continuing to do and what they're going to do in the future. And with my platform, that's what I aim to do. You know, I aim to educate people on certain aspects. You know, I dig behind the scenes of, you know, this record or this song or, you know, this album. You know, that's what I do because I want people to know, you know, the history of some of this stuff. You know, I want people to know the history of, you know, Brother J and the X-Clan and, you know, Chuck D and Flavor Flav and Public Enemy and, you know, even people that don't get the love that I feel like they deserve, you know, like an MC Breed or like my homie Prozac. You know, Prozac's 30, 35 years deep, East Palo Alto legend, working with Tupac and Digital Underground and Shock G to now, you know, he's done stuff with Too Short, Mount Westmore. You know, he's done a lot of big things that, you know, a lot of people don't know about. He's a dope-ass producer. Not even producer. He's just a dope-ass artist. You know what I mean? And Prozac's one of them dudes, you know? Ant Banks, you know, producer, super producer. I was at the thing in Oakland where they did the Soul Beat TV tribute to Ant Banks. You know, this dude's been a part of, you know, 30, 40 million records sold, platinum records, gold records. You know what I mean? Guy like that, like DJ Quick, same kind of scenario. You know, a lot of these dudes don't get the recognition, get the love, the admiration that I feel like that they deserve. You know, why? Because you got a lot of platforms that just want to push the negativity and push the bullshit.
Yeah, and that's something, yeah. And that's something that I think especially, and I'm going to go there, especially for black content creators, it's not good for us because it puts us in a negative light. It plays to the negative stereotype as black people. This all we're about is drama and that we are incapable of having thought-provoking, intellectual, and meaningful deep discussions that does not necessitate stupidity. It limits us. And that's something that we, you know, I think just need to get away from. You know what I'm saying? It's like, let's show for the betterment of the culture and for our people that we can engage in something respectful, real, relevant, and responsible. And we can be the best doing it. You know, and that's important. And this journey, in terms of what you've been doing, Chad, and you've been doing this so many years, what was probably the most favorite interview you did with somebody?
Oh, man, favorite interview?
Yes.
I couldn't even pinpoint just one. I mean, one of my favorites was the one I did with Too Short. Another one was CPO Boss Hogg.
Rest in peace. Yeah, we had him on the show a few
years back.
Yeah,
definitely rest in peace. Yeah, he wanted me to write a book, like my own book, and I kept nah, you know, I'm not gonna, nobody's interested in that, but he kept on me about it. So I finally started writing the book, and I hate that he's gone because you know now you know he's not gonna be able to read it or whatever, but. He was a good, solid dude. We became friends, you know, over the years. So, definitely interviewing CPO Boss Hogg was one of my favorites. Interviewed Fred Wreck a couple of times. He's got great stories, especially, you know, behind some of his great, you know, productions that he's done. You know, the story about the whole, how, the Gangsta Nation record with West Side Connection came about. Great story. You know, behind that. I'm trying to even think, man. Sir Jinx, you know, I was a DOC. I mean, I got so many interviews that I've done. I can't just pinpoint one favorite, but those off the top of my head are some of my favorite ones.
Yeah, but that means it's definitely something that you had a very rich, distinguished, and, I mean, essential history. I mean, you contributed to the culture in so many ways that has enriched it. And that's something, one thing about it, for we all understand collectively the responsibility that we share. To be the very best, to represent being the very best. And that's something we don't take lightly. And that's something we're just going to keep continuing to do. And I know, you know, we know you're going to do that as well. As the time winds down, Shad, this has been absolutely awesome. This has been educational. This has been informative. And definitely hilarious on a lot of parts. You know, we thank you, and you know you're welcome back anytime. You know, before we go, you know, you want to shout out, you know, your media, yeah, plug everything. You know, tell everybody where to find you.
Well, first of all, I appreciate you guys having me on. This is one of the rare times that I've been on the other side of an interview, so you know, I appreciate you guys taking the time out and reaching out to me and having me on your show. You can find me, got my website, chadkaiser.com. The podcast is Conversations with Chad. I'm getting ready to have a little hiatus, but I'm getting ready to get some new episodes up on that. Got some great lineup, a great lineup of people coming up on that. Social media is just Chad M. Kaiser. At Chad M. Kaiser. That's, you know, Twitter, Instagram, you know, all the major social media platforms. The only other thing I want to plug is I'm currently in the middle of writing a book for and with Ant Banks, producer extraordinaire, super producer. We're writing his book, myself, Ant Banks, and Shad Reed. We're doing that book. That should be coming out shortly. Other than that, man, like I said, appreciate you guys having me on. Anytime, anywhere, y'all just let me know.
I'm going to send you my address, Chad, because I got to get an advanced copy of that book, and I want a signature from all of y'all. We got to get an autograph from all of y'all.
Okay, for sure. No doubt.
Yeah, man. But, Chad, thank you so much, man. Yeah, absolutely. And even though it's a little bit of a, you know, y'all working a little bit with it, Cardinal Pride, we know it's strong in you, so we know they're going to get it right again eventually.
Oh, yeah, we're gonna turn it around. I got all the faith in the world. We're going to turn it around.
Yeah, man. Definitely. Yeah, man.
I just need the fan base to calm down a little bit. Like, we're gonna be all right. We just gotta get through this little bump in the road. We'll be all right though.
Yeah, yeah, and it happens. You know, King and myself were diehard Carolina fans, so you know we know how it is. But one thing about it is, that's the great thing about college ball. You know, one year it can all be turned around. So you just keep pushing and you support a team regardless. So yeah,
yep, that's all you can do.
Definitely. So once again, thank you so much, man. We appreciate you. God bless. And King, take us out of here.
On that note, we're about to be up out of here. Thank you once again for joining us. Thanks for everybody that took the time to listen to us and ride with us on this journey of 539 shows. We're going to keep it going forward for 2023. We thank you once again. We thank you once again, Chad, for joining us. The build has been tremendous, and it's been a beautiful thing to give podcasters and people that's involved with media that form of shine as well. So you definitely welcome back in the near future.
All right. I appreciate you guys. Thank you.
Appreciate you. And we out.
Peace.